Okay, this is a joke or something, right? We're not supposed to be here.
Well, if you're playing Brenda Walsh on Beverly Hills 90210, then you're in the right spot.
So you're a smartass.
I'm sure you'll all learn to call me much worse.
Tori, can't your father afford, like, a set on an actual studio lot? What am I supposed to do? Anyway, I think it's fun just to be doing this wherever we are. Yeah, that's the spirit, Tori.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition special, the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 edition story edition. And now your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Before we get into this very special episode, Dave, do you have any announcements?
Yes. You can buy an ad on this very program, Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. You can go to beverlyhills.com. You can go to previously.tv/ads, and there's a form there that gives you all the prices, all your options, whether you want to give us audio, whether you want us to create audio for you. And I do believe we are going to have our first ad soon. Somebody just bought an ad today. So hooray, making money on the
ad buyer.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard our ads before, you can check out Extra Hot Great. They're, kind of fun, short. They're not these big, 5-minute long audible.com ads you get in other places.
I got to tell you every single thing you need to know about Squarespace.
Yeah.
Unless you ask us to. If you are Squarespace, we will, but.
Ixnay. All right, so to
you
it.
You mean round place?
The unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 story, a Lifetime movie.
Yep.
The next in the series of terrible recreations brought to you by the city of Toronto?
I'm not even sure this
Vancouver?
Is Toronto. It's definitely not Vancouver.
It's something like Brampton.
Yeah, yeah. It's somewhere, we'll get to it, but it's somewhere on Lake Ontario. That's
Grimsby, Ontario. My favorite metaphorical place that is actually real.
Where one of my sister's ex-boyfriends is from. Yes, Grimsby. Could be Grimsby, maybe. Anyway, yes, the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 story. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Unlike the other recent unauthorized 90s show X stories on Lifetime, this one we actually got a screener for. That was not the case with the unauthorized Full House story, which came out last August, I want to say, or September. And the unauthorized Melrose Place story, which premieres as this podcast drops 1 week from today. We have not gotten a screener for that one yet, and obviously not Full House either. But for some reason, this one they thought either they needed to hype or it was so great they were super duper proud of it. Whatever the reason, I'm not questioning it because we got a screener and I'm super happy. What did you think,
yeah,
Sarah, overall?
I was, especially given the quality, of other product of this type. I forget what network was responsible for that hideous Brittany Murphy thing that
Reynolds was Lifetime.
Okay.
Hi, Lifetime.
After that, it really is like you're sort of under the dome spectrum. Yeah. But it's like, well, it's not as bad as Under the Dome. Like, well, but it's still horrible. This was quite a bit better than I was expecting. It still isn't good, but it was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Very watchable.
It is watchable. So let's go through it. We'll do it in our usual way as we do with 90210 episodes, on the assumption that a lot of people are probably going to, way more that listen to our podcast are going to only listen to this podcast and not actually watch the movie. So we'll take you through blow by blow. And do we have clips? Oh yeah, we got clips. So we open Indianapolis in quotation marks, 1992. Two boys who kind of look, I guess, like Luke Perry and Jason Priestley in that they're dressed in really bad 90s fashions and they have stupid hair, are being rolled through a mall in a garbage cart. And I have in my notes, JP is way too ugly, which I went back and revised. And then I re-revised it when I did the visual aids for this. Dave has a comment.
Yeah. In what context are they being rolled in the garbage?
They've come to the mall for an appearance.
I see.
And there are screaming mobs of girls.
They're being Beatlemania.
Got it.
Yes.
Got it. This is not a flashback to them in humble origins in
Indianapolis. No. It's a flash forward.
Working on the farm.
Correct. We're about to be
their
three,
rocket had
3 years
skidded
earlier.
Through the farm, and they were raised by Ma and Pa Kent.
That is not the case.
I'm confusing things.
Yeah, you are. So Max Lloyd-Jones plays Jason Priestley / Brandon Walsh in this movie. He is previously seen by you possibly as Christopher in Lifetime's Flowers in the Attic movie, where he seemed much cuter. In this, it sort of went back and forth. It really depended on what angle they got him on, because all of my problems with Jason...
No, it didn't, Tara.
All right, fine. All my problems with Jason Priestley and Brandon Walsh aside... He was definitely very cute at the time. Like, when the show was in its heyday, Jason Priestley was cute. This is empirically true, I feel.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, the extended time that we've spent with his braying, sort of, in retrospect. Like, I was totally team Brandon back then and thought he was cute, even though he was a foot shorter than me. So, yeah.
This kid is
all about the personality. This kid is, like, one of those Monchichi... like tertiary boy band looking kids. You're like, no.
Yeah. I see where they're going, and he is short, and he's sort of bright faced and whatever. But yeah, he's got a little bit of a simian thing going on in the face, which is kind of unfortunate for Jason Priestley. The other thing that we should, I'll bring this up now, cause I'm sure it's going to come up later as we go through it, but it's impossible for me to watch these unauthorized movies without thinking who was actually, like, who from the real production was involved and trying to make themselves look good. Because, you know, Dustin Diamond, obviously his book was the basis for the unauthorized Saved by the Bell story. So he got a much more complimentary edit than I think he would have under other circumstances. But did it seem to you like, for example... Tori Spelling obviously has a show on Lifetime now. She, you know, she has... unfortunately, Tori storytelling with Dean. So you would think that maybe she had some kind of a hand in this, but it's hard to tell because I feel like each of them gets a moment where they get to shine, even when they're mostly a shithead, including Shannon Doherty. Did you feel like there was, you know, maybe someone behind the scenes from the cast that had something to do with this or no?
No. Okay. Not really.
All right, moving on. So back in 1989, we are introduced to Aaron Spelling, who is played by Dan Castellaneta, better known as Homer Simpson's voice. And he is the biggest name in this production, which should tell you everything you need to know. He's having a meeting with a couple of executives from the Fox Network who somehow end up being the executives for the entire run of the show as we see it in this movie, which unlikely.
And are they boyfriends with each other? I don't...
Maybe. They're definitely... they seem chummy. It's hard to tell. And they
I kind of wanted the whole movie to be about... them, like, preparing for these meetings. It's sort of, you know, their car talk on the way home, but yeah. It wasn't. So anyway, moving on.
Yeah, in this scene, especially in the opening scene, it seems like they're setting up a bunch of comedy that these two guys are going to do later, and then it never really pays off. Like, they echo each other's gestures when they're grandiosely gesturing about what's going to happen at this new network Fox, but then it doesn't really ever come up again. Anyway, they're talking about the new Charlie's Angels, which Aaron Spelling says he will absolutely not do without Tay Leone. Hilarious.
I know.
There's also the exposition that this is the first time in 30 years that Aaron Spelling has, or 20 or something, I already forget, who cares, that in some span of decades that he hasn't had a show on the air, and he thinks the town is laughing at him and blah, blah, blah. He has to hear from these executives that, in fact, Fox and Barry Diller, who was the president of it at the time, are not interested in the new Charlie's Angels, but they have another idea, and we'll hear that in clip number 2.
And what does my friend Barry suggest is innovative? Aliens, robot cops, paranormal private investigators?
Teenagers.
Teenagers.
What is with that voice?
I don't know.
It's like he's doing some vaudeville character or something.
I don't really know what Aaron Spelling sounded like. Do you, Sarah? Is this like...
I have watched... I feel like I watched enough like E! True Hollywood Stories that this wasn't like bothersomely different, but he is doing that like the same thing that Iris was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's like, what is that like Boston Brahmin...
Yeah.
Joe Kennedy told me, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. So this is a preposterous idea. Aaron Spelling passes, and then he goes home to Don Mills in the biggest mansion they can find to be Spelling Mansion. He's talking to Barry on the phone where Barry is still trying to sell him on this. And then Aaron looks out the window and sees a couple of girls poolside. And of course, it's his daughter, Tori, and some other friend of hers who leaves before he goes outside. Tori, I have in my notes in quotation marks and all caps, looks nothing like Tori. You'll have to see her in the visual aids, the very first one. She looks nothing like Tori Spelling. She looks way more like Jenny Garth, although not as much as the girl who's playing Jenny Garth in this movie, but it's very weird casting on this girl. She's also not a really good actor.
Well, but how do you even get, like, who looks like the Spellings?
Yeah.
Nobody true. Except the Spellings. Like, they're like that froggy face. Like, how do you cast for that? I mean, that wasn't too bothersome to me.
Yeah. Here is what's bothersome, though. They start to talk and she has the Canadianest accent ever, as I also have in my notes. So let's hear a little bit of that in clip number 3.
You see anything you like?
No, not really. Every show you make is for adults.
That's my audience, adults.
I know, but there's a lot of cool young actors around who never get the chance to do anything good.
I'm guessing you're one of these cool young actors.
I'm really good, Dad.
At what?
Very funny. At acting.
Darling, if you could play 28 years old, I would find something for you in a second.
No, but that's the thing, Dad. I don't want you to find me something. I want to go out and audition for it, and I want to be right for it.
Someday, okay? I promise.
I'm not going to get my shot if you keep making these kinds of shows.
Gordon Lightfoot with an editorial opinion on that. You know, I didn't really hear the Canadian until she said
out.
Yeah, there was a.
I could hear it a lot.
She said but.
And on lot. Lot and yeah. Shot were very.
Yeah, and they
Canadian.
Have. And there's like a ton of those words, and then there's an around. And
yeah.
Guys, like, go back and use some synonyms that.
Dad, if you don't give me a job, I'm going to go to Degrassi. we'll get something there going.
When I drive back from Ottawa, does anyone want some Timbits? Like. Okay. Anyway, get used to that.
Yeah.
It's happening everywhere.
Yeah. So cut to one of these other cool actors. After this speech, Aaron Spelling gets back on the phone because, you know, he's got an idea that maybe she's right. So we get to see what every other major cast member was doing at the time. The Luke Perry, I would say, is passable. I mean, it's all on a we're grading on a curve here. He was OK, although he looks more like a Canadian Ben Whishaw to me.
You know, it would be really great if they could. Somehow cast Josh Duhamel now
Luke Perry?
As whatever he is. He's 42 or something like that. Just because you need somebody with all those brow wrinkles to really make it work.
Well, I guess the origin story of Luke Perry's brow wrinkles is that he was out in the sun a lot because he's working on a road crew. And there's talk of, you know, acting isn't respectable and blah, blah, blah. Someone asks him if he's ever met Sharon Stone in his acting jobs, which, like, she was not anyone in 1989, so weird reference. But then he gets offered a job to be the foreman, but he can't take that and still be going out, you know, to auditions during the day. So he's got something to decide. I wonder what he's going to choose. Moving on. Jenny Garth is out at lunch with her agent. She is the one who looks the most like the real Jenny Garth. And she even actually sounds like her.
Yeah, I was going to say the voice.
She's got the voice.
It's really a nice piece of business throughout from her.
Yeah, and there's a shot later where, spoiler alert, she cries, and I've got it in the visual aids too, but she like holds her wrist up to her nose in the exact way that Jenny Garth would when she cried on the show, which is like, this girl put some work into this, and I respect what she did.
Yeah, good job.
So her agent is saying that she's getting offered a job on this musical high school show called Hull High, and she's dubious about it, and rightly so, because that one's, it did happen, but it did not last more than one season, as I recall. Cut to poor Gabrielle Carteris, who looks like kind of like a busted Jenny Slate, actually. But she's in New York with her agent.
I would have gone with Jennifer Grey, but okay.
Yeah, either she's like right on the line between the two of those, which Gabrielle Carteris kind of is too, so not bad. But she's getting told that she's either too old or too young for everything her rep has for her. And she wants to go out for pilot season. Her agent is like, no, you're too old.
Yeah,
give up.
Hey, mutton, that's for lambs. That was harsh.
Kind of.
But true.
And then we're back with Jason Priestley, who at this point still has his ape drape. He's literally carrying a box of balls into his apartment.
His
which
what?
We get it. Ape drape.
Is that like his...
It's a mullet.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Ape drape. Okay. I did not coin that. Yeah, I'm not taking credit for it.
Just never heard of it.
That's a phrase. Yeah. So his roommate, who looks more like Jason Priestley actually than Jason Priestley does. But anyway, their third roommate apparently is Brad Pitt. And we hear what's going on with that in clip number 4.
I have a script delivery for...
Yeah, Jason Priestley. That's me.
No, actually, it's for Brad Pitt.
Pitt's not home. Come to think of it, he's barely ever home these days.
I'll take it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see what he's got.
Thelma and Louise. What's that?
No clue, dude. Sounds like a chick flick.
And then why aren't I auditioning for it?
You should be. You're definitely as pretty as Pitt.
That's very true. Very true.
Oh, my clothes fell off.
I would be interested to know, I failed to look this up, but in our next episode, which is Cousin Bobby Comes to Visit, Cousin Bobby is played by an actor named, I believe, Jason Curry, mm-hmm. Justin Curry, something like that. He was their roommate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, or he was Brad Pitt's roommate at some point, which if Brad Pitt still had roommates, they must have been. And he's from Vancouver. Like, I think they all knew each other and were roommates. Oh. So I would be interested to know if this guy is credited as that actor.
Huh.
In the scene, because it should be him.
Well, I'd love to tell you, but as of yesterday, when I tried to look up this project on the IMDb, there was a page for it, and the only people that were listed were Samantha Monroe, who plays Brenda, and Adam Corson, who plays Darren Star, and that's it. No one else. Like, this is still just a stub. Like, it's airing in, as we record this, in 2 days. What the hell? Anyway. So then we cut back to... Spelling Mansion, where we're given to understand that apparently Tori Spelling just like handpicked all of the actors who were going to play all of the cast, and soon enough we're getting a chemistry read for Shannon Doherty and Jason Priestley, and it goes pretty much how you'd think, judging by how the show ended up in clip number 5.
Brandon, come on, we're going to be late for our first West Beverly party.
Brandon, there's no...
Sorry to interrupt, Shannon, you don't need to stand so close to Jason.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No problem. Just start at the top.
Sorry. Brandon, come on. We're going to be late for our first West Beverly party.
Brandon, there's no
drifting
rush,
closer
okay?
to him.
Since when are you supposed to be on time for a party?
So you want to play it fashionably?
Oh, sorry to interrupt again. You guys are doing great. This is Darren Star, the creator of the show.
Hey. Hi, guys. I just want to remind you again that you're siblings. If you could great, thanks.
Of course. Did you want to take
Let's continue. Yeah. Okay. Brent, how you getting to that party? That girl Kelly, right?
Yeah, she's picking me up with a bunch of other girls. If you don't want to drive, you can sit on my lap or something.
No, I don't want to cramp your style.
Quite the family dynamic.
They are very close.
At the point where she says you can sit on my lap, someone opens their script to be like, is that even in there? Because they're so handsy with each other.
This is of interest to probably about like 3 people that are listening. But that music in the background is like 95% the same music from the original Ski Safari app on iOS. Huh. The whistling and sort of the jangly stuff. Yeah. If anybody plays that, they're like, where's that from? I swear to God, it's almost exactly the same. Huh. And that's one to grow on.
Anyway, this is our first exposure to Shannon Doherty, as played by Samantha Monroe, who I mentioned. If you that name is familiar, you're a nerd, because she was on Degrassi: The Next Generation. Like 3 or 4 seasons ago, maybe, she played Anya, who was a big nerd. She dated Sav, and she was into LARPing, and now she's playing Shannon Doherty, which is kind of hilarious. But you liked her in this,
yeah.
Sarah. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I thought her line delivery was really good.
Yeah, she's funny. Then we see Luke Perry coming in to read for Steve Sanders, which, surprise, kind of a mismatch. He's got his sleeves rolled up on his giant short sleeve shirt like a douche. And then we cut to some casting office where Tori Spelling has come in as Tori Mitchell to read for Kelly. Her outfit is hilarious. It's like this matching blouse and like cuffed shorts ensemble. It's in the visual aids. And even though the legend of her getting cast on the show is that she did sign up with a fake name so no one would know that she was Tori Spelling's or Aaron Spelling's daughter, there's a shot where we can see the casting director writes to her assistant or partner or whatever that what her real name is. So obviously she knew. Like, all of these scenes are taking place at Spelling Mansion. So presumably this woman knows and always knew who Tori was, but whatever. Moving on. Ian Ziering looks like when he finally gets cast, when we see him for the first time at the first table read for the pilot script. As I said to Sarah, he looks like the kid from Big before he turns into Tom Hanks with like yellow dye job.
And I said he looks like a aborted vat clone of TJ Miller.
Yeah, kind of.
His face is like a little too small for his head.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. That like all his features are clustered on like 20% of his face.
Yeah. Sorry, guy.
The Brian Austin Green is, Sarah thinks, the most good-looking guy in the cast. Is that accurate, Sarah?
I do.
Perhaps because, in my opinion, he looks like he could be the son of Kevin Durand, so much that I looked up Kevin Durand to find out if he had a teenage son, because Kevin Durand is Canadian, but apparently not. But they really, really look alike. And so this is the first meeting between Brandon and Steve, or Jason and Ian, in clip number 6.
So you're Ian, right?
Ian.
Cool, man. Jason.
So, what's with the bake sale crap?
No idea. Hey, can we get some of the grown-up baskets with the good stuff?
Yeah, you know what? I think you and I are going to get along.
Yeah.
Oh, yes!
That was, of course, ending on a windmill high five. I assume I didn't need to tell you that.
Hey, I found that music I was talking about.
Oh, you did? Yeah, that's really close. Yep.
And then there's whistling in it.
I like that music.
There's whistling in it, too. That game is really good, by the way. There's Ski Safari 2 just came out, but Ski Safari 1, I can heartily recommend it.
Ski Safari is not a sponsor of this podcast, but if anyone from Ski Safari is listening. Anyway.
I hear Michael McDonald really loves that game.
Ski Safari.
So the girls, meanwhile, are across the room slavering over how good-looking Jason Priestley is. And almost immediately, a divide splits the cast apart between old and young. And we hear it in clip number 7.
Looks like the kiddies found the snack table. I don't want to tie them over till din-din.
Well, I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Tori, so be nice.
Do you think they're discussing their favorite Smurf?
Nah, probably their favorite new kid on the block.
They're so old.
This is really Tori sad. And Brian now.
I heard the blonde guy is like 27 or something.
Well, what do you think they're talking about?
I don't know. Their favorite Golden Girls episode.
Totally. Or like how much they all love Bob Hope.
I'm not convinced that teenagers even at this point would know who Bob Pope even is. Although I guess they're in LA, so everything is named after him. Maybe they would.
I feel like everybody knew who Bob Pope was.
I guess. At that point, he was still doing specials. You're right. I retract my statement. So then it's time for everyone to go to the table read. And Shannon makes a big damn deal about how she wants to sit next to Jason and makes everyone feel awkward. And then we get a literal sad trombone when everyone shows up to the facility where they're shooting the pilot. It's shared by a porn production company, and a bunch of them show up in a convertible, like in their trampy.
So when you say sad trombone, is that some sort of porn thing?
No, it's like a literal sad trombone sound effect.
Okay.
So we heard at the up top that the place is a shithole, and Shannon is a bitch immediately. There's a whole thing where they go through who's in what order at the call sheet. She's at the top. And at this point, there's still no Dylan. And then we get a montage of shooting this and that. The Darren Star guy is really not as cute as the real Darren Star. Darren Star should be very hurt with the casting of this other dude. Brian Austin Green makes fun of his wardrobe, gives Tori a mixtape because he's really into music and dancing. And then there's a screening. Everyone leaves it very dispirited. How dispirited? Let's find out in clip number 8.
Wait a minute. You just shot a pilot for a network television show and you're applying for a hostess position? Why? Because I just saw it.
Burn. That was Gabrielle Carteris hedging her bets. And meanwhile, Darren Star, the creator of the show, is similarly pessimistic in conversation with Aaron Spelling. He thinks it's missing something big, and he thinks he knows what in clip number 9.
We have to save this show. Got it?
Yes. Okay. So what do we do?
It needs an edge. Everyone is so damn polished. The show needs some balls.
I agree. Maybe these kids are just too nice and civil. Brandon Walsh is like Generation X's George Bailey.
What we need is a bad boy.
And you picked that guy.
Yeah. I also love the
character. Here's how you know he's bad. He's smoking in the audition.
Yeah. And he shows up still all grubby from his job, which, like, they called him on a payphone or something, apparently, because it's 1989 or 90 or whatever. So he shows up all grimy, smokes in the audition. Casting lady has a total wide on for him, so obviously he gets cast. Aaron Spelling fights for him with the network, claiming that he's a total hot commodity, which is apparently a total lie, and offers to pay for Luke Perry to be added to the cast out of his own pocket because he so believes in him. And then he shows up on the set, and the casting lady's not the only one with a wide on for him, as we hear in clip number 10.
Hey, everyone. This is Luke. He's trouble.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Good, good. Hey, I realize nobody likes the new kid. I'm the interloper crashing your party.
No, we could definitely use some fresh blood. I'm Shannon. Oh.
She's number one on the call sheet, as you probably guessed.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess I should stay on your good side then.
You can certainly try.
At this point, they've only shot one episode that we know of, so I feel like it's a little bit early for Shannon to have gotten this kind of diva reputation, but on the other hand, I suppose they have to speed through this exposition pretty quickly.
Well, and she may have had it before
that. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not sure how, from Little House on the Prairie and Our House with Wilford Brimley, but you gotta have a big personality to, you know, hold up against the demands of the diabetes, or I don't know.
I suppose that's true. And also, yeah, I mean, they have to start planting the seeds for how much work she's going to get, like, almost immediately. But anyway, Luke Perry gives her a long last look, and Jason Priestley's like, careful. And there's this, like, comedy bit where Ian Ziering tricks Jenny Garth into, like, going somewhere to rehearse some kiss, which did not occur in season one or possibly ever, as I can recall. But whatever, they get busted by everyone else. And then the show premieres, 13 episodes in. They're 92nd in the ratings. They're up against Cheers, which is, you know, rough. That was the number one show at the time. And there's mention of big episodes that are coming up, which we've already covered on this podcast. The AIDS episode, the slumber party. So Darren begs for more of a chance, like a few more episodes to show what the show can really do. They get three. And then we're in the editing bay with Darren Starr and this editor who's worked on a bunch of other canceled shows. So here's where the unauthorized part of it gets kind of hilarious, because clearly the only people that are going to be watching this movie probably are people that watched 90210, which is, like, you know, everyone our age, really. But they can't use any real stuff from the show, so it's got to be, like, this off-brand, like, cover of the episode.
Non-union Mexican equivalent.
Exactly. So we hear a little bit of the dialogue from what is obviously supposed to be the slumber party. So it is, but it isn't. And we
but
hear
that. But she's outside.
This is in the visual aids, too. They're out on the lawn. But, like, when you hear the speech, it clearly is supposed to be reminding us of that. So let's hear clip 11.
And he's like, come on, Kelly. You'll be my girlfriend. We'll be a couple. And I believed him. After we went back to where everyone was hanging out. And he never said another word to me.
I wish I could talk to whoever wrote this about, like, the challenge of writing a speech. Is like, you know, like I said, it's like a cover. Like, it's a paraphrase of the thing that
it's like rewriting the press release that they probably cut out. Like, he didn't even bring a blanket. It was like, he didn't even put a pot holder. Shit, let's just cut it.
Right. But yeah, just to make sure that there's no intimation that they're actually ripping off the real scene. As Sarah said, they are outside. So Darren Starr watches this whole scene, and then he gets teared up at Jenny Garth's performance, and he's so upset because he's sure kids will watch it if they can just find it. They need divine intervention. Oh, what could possibly happen? Maybe the first Iraq war. All of the other networks suspend commercial programming. We get to see Barry Diller in his office, which I'm pretty sure is an actual working bank branch, judging by what the set looks like. But anyway, Fox's response, because at this point they don't have a news division, is that they're showing all their originals to compete with the news coverage because people are going to want relief, is the theory. And it turns out to be true. And then we get Barry saying, would it kill Fox to get a news division? Like, haha. So that actually goes well, except there are problems on the set, which we hear in clip number 12.
Okay, how come Jenny and Tori get to wear Gucci and Prada and I'm stuck looking like I work at the Mall of America? Yes, it's very funny.
What's going on?
Shannon hates her clothes. She thinks they're too Midwest.
Midwest would be an improvement. This is like deep South.
Brenda's from Minnesota. She's not going to have the same clothes as Kelly and Donna. Certainly not at the beginning.
Shannon, I think you, well, I mean Brenda, look really pretty in those clothes.
Thank you, Kat. No offense, so, but your style and clothing kind of reminds me of my mother's.
And then we get to see the guys trying on their wardrobe as well. In the visual aids, you will see Brian Austin Green of the movie in a jacket that clearly is nothing David Silver actually wore because it fits him. But the Steve outfit is pretty good. It's the orangest, like, blouse ever tucked into white pants.
Oh, God, it's the best. It's the worst.
It is. Also, while they're doing this, Luke Perry is in overalls with one strap undone, because obviously. And when Ian puts his arms down by his side in this outfit, he says he looks like a creamsicle, which he does. There's an incident where they're shooting a scene of Dylan and Brenda making out in what is really a terrible approximation of the Walsh living room. It looks like the corner of a hotel room. But Luke Perry goes for Shannon Doherty's boob and, they get in trouble because he's not allowed to do that. And it's such an incident that Aaron Spelling actually has to get called to the set to tell them all what the limitations
are. This might actually explain, sorry to interrupt.
Please.
This might actually explain, you know how I, like, could not let go the blocking in the pilot where Jason, the lawyer, was, like, weirdly running his hands up Shannon Doherty's sides and, like, into her pits?
Yes.
And I just realized while you were talking, like, this is probably because he would have been, like, you know, mauling the girls.
Yeah.
But standards of practices was like, no.
You're right. That's a very good point.
It's still weird though. There's other ways to do that. Come on.
There is. Like, just show them from the just show them from the neck up or something. But anyway, there's some comedy in this where Luke Perry says, "I can't help it. That's just where the hand wants to go," and Shannon is okay with it. And we find out why at the end of the "Everyone keep your hands off each other" meeting in clip 13.
Let's just wrap this up so everyone understands and is on the same page. Above the waist. Off the breast. Repeat. Above the waist. Off the breast. Perfect. Now don't forget this, as it's clear you're all getting to know each other a little more intimately on screen.
On screen?
What did that mean, what Jason said? On screen?
Apparently the making out hasn't just been going on in front of the camera.
Is that so? Who's making out with who?
Everyone's making out with everyone.
I love that first AD so
much.
Me
too! He's such a hero. He's the best. He's over.
He's like Canadian Paul Giamatti.
He is. He totally is. And yeah, that's everyone's making out with everyone. Like, he doesn't care. And then this
for Canadian, we'll call him Paul Jahaki.
Okay. This kicks us into a montage of really everyone making out with everyone. As I have in my notes, they're all fucking. It's really every combination of guy and girl. And it ends with Shannon and Jason making out until Darren has to come and, like, physically put his hands on their forehead and pull them apart.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That is awesome. Boink. It's in the visual aids. And then we see a Chiron for Winter Dance Season 1 Finale Lies. It's the Spring Dance. It's not the Season 1 Finale, but whatever.
They're not wearing the dress.
No one is wearing the right outfit at all. They're close, but they're not, like, they're just the wrong color or whatever.
And it also looks like they may be, I mean, we keep bringing up that every place they're shooting looks like somewhere else, like a bank branch. And this is the point in my notes that I put, I couldn't figure out what I meant at first. I watched this a few days ago and I put kid twist. Did you guys watch The Sting?
No.
Okay. There's a scene in The Sting where he, like, just pretends that he's there to paint the bank manager's office.
Yeah.
And then he pretends he's the bank manager. It's all part of the big store con.
Okay.
So that must have been what I meant.
Okay.
But this looked like they were just doing guerrilla shooting in like someone else's wedding scene in someone else's movie.
You're right. Except it's not, I mean, at least in the show, it looked like a hotel ballroom, even though I'm sure it wasn't. Like, this looks like a school gym.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah. But I mean, throughout, it's like, as budge as the real thing was,
for
this
sure.
is like even budger.
Yeah.
Anyway,
continue. I think what is doubling for the studio or whatever, the facility where they're shooting, like all the backstage stuff is supposed to look crappy at first. And then they're still shooting there after it. They get all cleaned up after season two and like it still looks crappy. But I think it must be like a decommissioned school or something, because they also keep having meetings in this room that's like the marked as the cafeteria, which like never was a set on 90210 ever. Like anytime people are eating, they're either out on the lawn at school, at the Walsh house, or at the Peach Pit. That's it. Like I feel like we never saw the cafeteria.
No,
past
we
the
never
pilot.
Saw the calf.
Yeah, where they there's a thing in the pilot where they're like getting their food outside, but that like that also never comes up again, as I recall. Or at least it hasn't since then. Anyway, enough of our fact checking. So the network guys are there. They take forever to say they want to make new episodes for the summer, which is unprecedented. There's going to be 30 episodes per season, maybe more. Darren Star immediately gets the idea of like doing a Flamingo Kid kind of thing with Brandon, which a lot of people mentioned that in the Beach Club episodes in our thread. So you guys are smart. That's exactly what it was supposed to be. And then Tori comes in her wrong comedy dress for the school dance. It's turquoise, really bright turquoise instead of red. And she's waylays Darren Star to tell him her great ideas for her character in clip 14.
Hey, I think I have a few ideas for Donna. Just to be sort of like Lucille Ball was, like funny and silly, you know?
Okay, well, what'd you have in mind?
Which one?
This one.
I don't know. It's hard to explain. I just really think Donna should be funny. Like, that should be her thing. And flighty, but not dumb.
Darren, can I show him my new dance moves? Brian, absolutely. Just give me 2 seconds. I'm going to find you, okay? Tori, I'm loving these ideas, but there's nothing in the script right now.
How about just point a camera on me over there and let it run? I'll just do stuff.
Stuff?
Yeah, stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, stuff.
Okay.
I mean, it is funny, but yeah, I mean, you can see in the visual aids for that episode's spring dance, not winter dance, that that is basically what happened, including the extra glaring at her while she's just doing stuff randomly while a camera runs. So good to know the origin story for that idiocy. Anywho, then, of course, the other thing that everyone remembers from the spring/winter dance episode is Dylan and Brenda getting it on. So we see them in their hotel room scene again. Her dress is wrong, but I get the idea. It's like instead of black with a white bow, it's like black but similar cut. It's got like a heart cutout or something on the back. Her hair is styled correctly. It's definitely Brenda's like updo. And there's a boom mic in the shot, hilariously, but you actually see the boom guy. But I still think
that is amazing.
I still think that's an homage to the boom mic in so many episodes. She calls
it has
cut.
To be.
It, I feel like it, there's no way it can't be. So she gets annoyed by how Luke is making out with her and calls cut. We get exposition that she was late for work today, but Darren says she learned the rewrite in 90 seconds. And apparently she like learns scripts super fast. So I guess that's her superpower and why they kept her around, even though she was a problem, question mark. Anyway, there's more business of, you know, shooting this episode. There's a fake scene of the virginity reveal where Kelly is also in a totally other dress, which is red and not the same as the one that Brenda's wearing, but whatever. As soon as they call cut, the two of them fall out of character immediately so that we know they are not friends. And then it's the end of season one. The show is a hit. The shitty set gets cleaned up. Luke Perry is now fully in the cast and he's number 4 on the call sheet. And Shannon is still first and late again. And then Aaron Spelling gets a call in the middle of the night. It's a bad problem. It's not Shannon. The network is threatening to pull the plug because advertisers are fleeing, and we hear what the fix is from our two network guys in clip 15.
Every major advertiser we have is running for the hills. Tell them, Bill.
Yeah, it's true. Parents are calling the affiliates. They're enraged.
Enraged?
aged? Why?
Because we just told their teen daughters to go have sex. That's why.
What did we do wrong? A high school girl in America lost her virginity.
And she bragged about it. She showed no remorse.
Aaron, please understand. A teenage girl in America can lose her virginity on TV. She just can't
enjoy it. Look, we are a brand new network.
That means that we already have credibility problems with our advertisers.
But the show is a hit.
Not without advertisers, it isn't.
We are airing in 83 different countries right now. And with our summer episode plans, this is an absolute disaster.
Well, what are you asking us to do, guys? We can't put toothpaste back in the tube.
We're not asking, Aaron. Placate our sponsors. Apologize to America.
Apologize to America? How?
Brenda's got to stop having sex with Dylan, and she needs to feel confusion and remorse for doing so in the first place.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Thank you.
You like can... putting toothpaste back in the tube.
So you can hear from that clip that for some reason...
Flatbush.
They shot this like partly outside this glass-walled conference room and then back inside. Like, why? It's so unnecessary. And this looks even more like a bank branch than the Barry Diller office set does. Anyway, it's really stupid. Looks cheap and terrible. Aaron asks for a minute and takes Darren into the bathroom where Darren tries to take a principled stance on this. But Aaron wants to be in the Darren Star business because he's pretty sure he's got a future and they want to do many new shows together. But they're just going to have to give in on this first. And as we've been saying for the last like 8 episodes of the regular podcast, we all know how this ended up and how little sense it made. But then we get to see what Shannon and Luke maybe thought about it in clip 16.
Does this make any sense?
Not at all. I mean, did you know about this, about Brenda and Dylan breaking up?
No, I knew there was going to be a conflict or something.
No, but this is ridiculous.
See, this is what I'm saying. It just doesn't feel right.
Darren, can we talk to you for a second, please?
Okay. Hey, what's up?
This doesn't make any sense.
I mean, she's right, man. There's just no way that Brenda and Dylan would be breaking up right now.
Guys, I know this.
You're trying to tell me that Brenda and Dylan are going to stop having sex after just once. I mean, tell him, Shan.
Well, I mean, I didn't want Brenda to lose her virginity in the first place, so.
Look, guys, I know that this is ridiculous, but we don't have a choice. For now, we have to play ball, okay?
All right, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, let's reset.
We just have to do it with a straight face. You're on my hair.
You're on my hair.
Dylan!
So that confirms what one of the commenters said about Shannon Doherty's attitude toward this storyline at the time. So that's interesting. Apparently that was also made its way to the screenwriter of this movie as well. And then they break up, I guess, and maybe after their complaints, they wrote in one more time at least to have sex, because they do have sex in that episode before she dumps him. But anyway, or the one before, I forget. Maybe it's the...
Yeah, when they thought they were moving.
Yes, that's right. The actual
unless they were
season
just scissoring,
finale.
Who knows what was going on.
So then it's they're starting to shoot the beach episodes, and please look at the visual aids, because as we said, this definitely was filmed on a lake and not an ocean, so probably not Vancouver, because it's clearly a lake. Like, none of these shots looks like the ocean at all. There's barely any sand. People are like standing in it with surfboards, like, not gonna work. Good
they
luck
look
though.
Freezing
they
too.
Look so cold.
Where exactly in Manitoba are ya?
And then there's a bunch of exposition about award nominations for the show's first season, which both Sarah and I were like, what? But apparently it is true.
Oh my God, that must have been such a thin year.
I know. Oh. Well, the TV, you know, this was pre-peak TV. This was pre, like, HBO originals. Like, the TV landscape was very different at the time, even so. They were nominated for Golden Globes, an acting nomination for... Jason Priestley in 93 and 95, and then they were nominated for Best Drama in 92 and 93, which the timeline is off because we're going to be back in 1991 later, but whatever. Shannon is still fighting with the girls about wardrobe, tries to pull rank before there's some kind of promotional photo shoot, and then it ends with the two of them in red, Shannon in front in black with crossed arms looking pissy, which you can see that in the visual aids too. And then we get more exposition. They end up number two overall in their time slot. Number one among teens. They almost beat Cheers. And then we are caught up to the scene that opened us up at the beginning. The girls chasing the boys through an autograph signing at a mall.
In a garbage can.
In a garbage cart. then they're at Chasen's, which this is in the visual aids too. Chasen's, a real restaurant, does not have a T in it like the word Chasen, which is how whoever wrote that Chiron should feel by this correction. And fucking Luke and Jason are having burgers when we're meant to understand that Ronald Reagan comes over to introduce himself, which it's such a weird detail that like that has to have actually happened. Yeah. Like that must be in Jason Priestley's memoir or something. Is it? You read it, right, Sarah?
I don't remember that. Oh. I'm sure it happened. Reagan would have been living in California by that time.
That's true.
I'm not sure he was still a public figure.
Right.
Because of some issues.
Sure.
The little teeny imitation that Dave Cole just did is about 1,000 times more convincing than the actual guy who I think might be Asian.
Wow.
I think they just went out on the street and was like, can anyone fit in this suit? And then they put some shoe polish in his hair and that was the end of it. Like,
for the record, what? I was doing a Saturday Night Live impression of Ronald Reagan. It's the only one I know.
Still.
Randy Quaid.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. So then after that happens, Jason and Luke get kicked out because a mob of girls has tracked them there and they're making a ruckus.
Get out of our garbage can. It's ours.
Yeah, boys, that garbage can's big enough for the rest of you two. Get in there, girls.
Would you like some jelly beans?
Anyway, moving on. Shannon is late for work again. Everyone's mad.
I can't promise Ronald Reagan won't come back.
Oh no. I wish you would.
So now it's Reagan and Michael McDonald. Oh boy.
Hello,
it's getting
Michael.
Crowded. I don't think
I've
we can pay all these
your,
people.
Music and hopefully one day you can perform at my inaugural ball. Back to 90210. What a delightful program.
Anyway, we're back on the alleged cafeteria set never seen on the show. So that a merchandising guy can come. Oh no.
Just keep going.
All right. The merchandising guy has exciting news ish in clip 17. Shut up, Dave.
Are you ready?
Yeah, sorry. No.
Huh? I just spoke to a major toy company who will be making 90210 dolls of you guys.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, isn't that great?
Of all of us?
That actually remains to be seen.
Let me guess, little girls aren't lining up for the Andrea doll?
Well, the first batch is going to be Brenda, Brandon, Kelly, and Dylan. I and Brian, Gabrielle, I am sure if this first round goes gangbusters, they will be tripping over themselves to make dolls of you guys.
Bummer, that would have been really cool.
It'll happen.
Yeah, you want mine, you can have it. I don't know what's more embarrassing, having a doll made of me or not having a doll made of me.
Weirdly, what they don't say is any mention of Tori Spelling, because there was a Donna doll in this run, improbably, because she was not a big character at that point still, and obviously was included because Aaron Spelling was her dad.
Dave? I was about to say something really mean, but I'm not going to do it.
Go ahead.
No, it's mean. All right, fine.
Was it a My Little Pony joke?
No.
Maybe Reagan wants to say it.
Yeah, Reagan's a bastard. Let him.
Well, I was just wondering, maybe they took the dolls that were a little defective and they just put the Donna box on those ones. Oh, these breasts are too far apart. That's the Donna doll.
Moving on.
What a president. Jerk.
Ronnie, how could you?
Go eat some jelly beans and think about what you've done.
Oh, boy, sorry.
But there are other problems on the set, and after a very canned news report, which in the screener we don't actually get to see because I assume they added it later, we hear a little bit about how Shannon's bad behavior is getting out to the press and some more discussion in clip 18.
So, Shannon's getting beat up in the press a little, huh?
More than a little, Mr. Spelling. They've sold 7,000 copies of this thing called the I Hate Brenda newsletter.
Does Shannon know about this I Hate Brenda movement?
She does.
What does she say about it?
She says, I hate Brenda too.
Well, good for her.
And here's an article where she speaks of her love for George Bush and then condemns her fans for confusing her with her character from her show.
She has an opinion on everything. I mean, who the heck does she think she is?
I guess it's official. Everyone hates Shannon.
No, everyone loves to hate Shannon.
I mean, there is a difference, and shout out to whoever created the I Hate Brenda newsletter, because that person basically created the internet before it existed, so way to go.
Yep.
There's more of a montage of the worst paint job ever in everyone's new spiffed up dressing room, supposedly. And then Shannon is surprised late again and rude to everyone and gets some new cute brunette extra fired. There's a fake scene of the conversation that we just heard in the last podcast that we did, of Kelly and Brenda talking about letting Dylan hit rock bottom, and Shannon keeps snapping Jenny's skirt, and they end up stomping outside to have a physical fight that actually gets close to blows where they have to be separated, ends up with like Jenny Garth on the hood of a car, which is actually kind of awesome. And if it really did happen that Jenny was like, let's just go, I can't believe this, blah blah blah, I would be really shocked, because it seems like Shannon Doherty would fight extremely dirty and would kick anyone's ass who tried to get in her way.
And yeah, Jenny Garth in her memoir, which is okay, it's like well written, but it's very like California Zen bygonesy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, Shannon was difficult, let's put it that way. Like, she's just not willing to really go there, which is a pity. But I feel like she would have mentioned, like, if that was a notorious thing that happened, she would have at least mentioned it. And even if she were lying, she would have been like, it didn't happen. I think that's really unauthorized, because she doesn't mention it. And I don't think Priestley does either. I'd have to go back and check my work on that.
I'm
not going to go back and check.
Obviously. So then obviously this is such an issue that it catalyzes this montage of everyone individually going to Aaron Spelling and telling him what a terrible nightmare Shannon is in clip 19.
Yes, Luke.
Mr. Spelling, I'm officially putting in my request to work with Shannon as infrequently as possible.
You're not the first to say this.
But man, it's gone critical mass. I'm not kidding.
What happened?
She's totally irrational. She's completely ill-tempered. She's patently uncooperative. She's basically impossible to deal with.
We're mid-season, Luke. What can I do?
I don't know. Maybe give Dylan some kind of a tropical virus that makes coming around, you know, slightly deranged brunettes highly lethal.
That's not a bad storyline, kid. It'll be fine.
I get along with everyone, Mr. Spelling.
This is Gabrielle.
You know that.
Of course.
This has been the greatest time of my life, and nothing could ruin it, but...
You'd like to speak about a certain cast member. Let me guess.
Brian.
Shannon.
So interestingly, what they keep emphasizing is that the last person to continue defending her was Tori, so that sort of throws into a different light the fact that the two of them got siloed in their own storyline in France soon after all of this happened.
Right. Well, I think they were like the ones that were going out to clubs and getting in fights at clubs, which I think we see.
We
in
do.
This.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know who we never see? Douglas Emerson.
No, he's not even mentioned. You're right.
No.
Yeah, he's not a factor in season
one. No doll.
No.
No Canadian facsimile. No. Nada.
Who is that?
Dead Scott.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Exactly, Dave. Exactly.
So after everyone's finished tattling to Aaron, we cut back to Shannon in her dressing room, sadly gazing at what she's become, until Ian shows up with keys and suggests they get out of there. And they peel out in what is supposed to be his show convertible, except, as you'll see in the visual aids, it does not have an I8A Ferrari license plate. They go to the trouble of getting a California one, but then they don't go the extra mile and like get a sticker to put over it with the real one. Whatever. She acts like she's never been in a convertible before, poking her head out the top and whooping and stuff. And then he tries to start sense into her in this regrettable exchange. Clip number 20.
Hey, what the hell is it with you, Shannon?
What are you talking about?
Talking about how you're behaving.
I'm behaving. Are you my dad?
Oh, thank God. Look, you're acting crazy. You're out of control. You're like a shark. You're like a tornado. You're like a mixture between a shark and a tornado.
I don't get it.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Clunk. So bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the temptation, but like, just don't. Don't do it. Anyway, she knows the world hates her. He says they hate Brenda. People can be mean, and she cries and she's lonely. He gets it. She finally talks him into letting her drive. God knows why. And of course she gets into an accident. And of course, because this production can't afford to wreck a car, it's the kind of accident where nothing bad actually happens to it, as you again will see in the visual aids. And when our friends, the network suits, show up, Ian says he was driving. So I guess this is Ian's moment to be a cool dude. I don't know. Then it's 1992. They're at the Roxbury, the quietest club ever. The entire cast rolls up together to go out and dance or whatever. Jason is looking like an idiot in another vest. Shots are done. The guy they hired to play Brian Austin Green cannot dance at all. For whatever problems I have with Brian Austin Green, he really was a good dancer. So this
was a good dancer.
Unfair.
And I mean, he was not a good rapper.
No.
But he was a good dancer.
Yes.
This really is where the Kevin Durant, this is like if Kevin Durant in character on The Strain were trying to dance while drunk.
Let's all do the fete. Yeah, I know.
Let's all do the fete.
New impression, Chubby Checker's here. Anyway.
Tara, I believe that was Michael McDonald.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Who's actually Little Richard. Who fucking cares? Maybe I'm drunk.
Gabrielle, there's later on, Gabrielle's trying to leave, probably because it's 8:30. I feel you, Gabrielle. Tori makes her do a lap with her around, and when Shannon and Jenny are left alone awkwardly, they sort of make peace about whatever. Who cares? Doesn't really go anywhere. Shannon can't really explain why she's such a monster. Later on the dance floor, Jason wants to leave because they have an early call time, and so Jenny goes to get Shannon, and then some guy tries to start shit with Brian Austin Green and then recognizes him and calls him a loser. Shannon tries to intervene on Brian's behalf. The guy dismisses her. So, of course, as you do, she jumps on his back and starts a brawl. And later she finds out she's getting charged with misdemeanor battery. And it gets worse from there in clip 21.
Do you know who you're talking
to? Do I know who you are? Yes. You are a big pain in the ass. Everybody thinks that.
Ooh, burn. After he wanders off, Shannon's
sucks.
Like... Yeah, but I love how she's like, whatever, and then says, if I'd known I was going to get charged, I would have actually made it count, which is sort of great.
Yeah.
I kind of love the portrayal of her as like a real bruiser because, you know, why not? And then the paparazzi are there taking pictures of everything. Tori promises that she will tell her dad what really happened, but then he's getting another late night call. Candy, in quotation marks, is pissed. Whoever they got to play Candy. I mean, whoa.
Oh, excuse me.
She gets no lines and she looks nothing like Candy Spelling. And then we get more of a litany of everything that Shannon's doing wrong. She dropped out last minute as an Emmy presenter. The network guys no longer think her leaving the show would hurt it that much. Darren sticks up for her and says the writers love her. They think she's the best. She nails their scripts every time. Aaron is not sure whether it's a worse idea at this point to keep it or not. And then, you know, no one can really say. So he announces that she stays. And then it's season 4. Dun, dun, dun. Shannon's not in her dressing room. Jason Priestley and Luke Perry play with Super Soakers and a nice nod to whatever. Luke is in his sleeveless Baja hoodie. Sorry, Sarah.
I mean, I was like happy to see it because I was like, someone else feels my pain with this garment.
Yep.
But then my pain with this garment.
Yes. Later, everyone is killing time in the parking lot waiting for her. And finally, they have a discussion amongst themselves because she still doesn't show up about whether she should stay. Tori is the last person defending her. But they all agree that if they're going to try and get her fired for realsies, they need to be unanimous. And then she unfortunately shows up at the perfectly wrong time. And we hear this in our final clip.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Look, I am really sorry. I've been going through some really hard family stuff at home. My grandma's been in and out.
Sorry to hear that, Shannon.
What is going on?
Everyone wants you out of here, Shannon.
What, even you? I thought you were supposed to be my friend.
I am your friend.
This is Tori,
honestly. And I'm the only one you've got right now. Do not walk away from me! You're behaving atrociously, Shannon. Now, I suggest you go to wardrobe right now and get ready to shoot. Do you understand?
So this is the way it's gonna be?
What? You think because you helped me get this job that you can talk to me like that? You better watch your back.
Whoa.
What do you think the employee handbook says about threatening the boss's daughter?
Got a feeling it's something you just don't do.
Feeling you're right.
Wait, there's an employee handbook?
I just left in that last bit. It's Gabrielle and Jason because it's like the kind of stupid non-joke comedy that would make it onto the actual show.
Totally. And Shannon did say in her recent whatever, How to Be a Badass book, which is lamentable. Starting with the fact that badass isn't hyphenated. Come on.
Yeah.
That there was a lot of family shit going on. I think her father was extremely poorly. Mm. But note that they even changed the family members so that
right.
she wouldn't sue them. hospital bed. Ooh.
I get that people have problems, and like, especially if you're an actor and like her, you've been an actor since you were like a little kid, that you get into bad habits and think you can get away with shit. But like, being late is such a stupid way to get yourself fired. Like, being on time for shit is not that hard. Sarah, I know you, early girl, feel me on this.
Yes, I do.
But, you know, not to brag in this today, notwithstanding, but like, I get up between 4 and 4:30 most days. Like, it sucks, but like, if that's your what you have to do for your job, you just do it. And I'm sure they were not requiring her to get up at 4 to go to makeup. Thank you, Dave. My tiny triumph.
No, you're the most valuable player.
Oh, so. I see.
It's true.
Anyway, so that's pretty much that. We next get like B audio roll of a news report confirming that Shannon will be leaving the show at the end of the season. And then it's the end of the season and Flunkies are loading her car with all her stuff. And there's talk of who's going to replace her. Darren mentions Saved by the Bell. And then we're in season 5 and Tiffany Amber Thiessen shows up. And in a nice nod of continuity, it's the same woman who played Tiffany Amber Thiessen in the unauthorized Saved by the Bell story.
Oh, so nice.
Now I guess we know they exist in the same universe, which I suppose is supposed to be our universe, even though Chasen's is spelled with a T. And then
that's the one thing. Yeah. Like, there are infinite universes, so there is a universe where we're exactly the same, except Jason's as a T.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Jenny shows up. She's kind of rude to Tiffany, and then she goes into Shannon's old office where a different flunky is peeling her name off of her old dressing room door so that we understand Jenny is the new head bitch in town. And then we get a little bit of brief, you know, where they went screams, but like everyone knows where they went because they never really went anywhere. And this might be corrected in the real version versus the screener that we saw, but Tiffany Thiessen spelled wrong in the credits. And that's it. That's the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 story. Even Lifetime knows no one cares what happened on that show after Shannon Doherty left. And I stand by that.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to find a way.
I know. I'm making my peace with it. I will.
How's that going?
I still have a long way to go, so it's fine.
Needs work? Okay.
But yeah, I thought this was like, this was fun. It's, you know, I would probably watch any of these about a show that I watched as obsessively as 90210. I'll probably check out the Melrose Place one, even if we don't get a screener, even though I'm not as well versed in Melrosiana as I am in 90210, obviously. But yeah, as we said at the top, it definitely could be worse. I've seen worser ones. The Brittany Murphy one, a particular low point in the genre.
Yeah, this isn't good, but it's not boring.
No, it's like, not boring.
It gets it's a little like at the beginning, it's a little like, but mm-hmm. I mean, it moves right along. So yeah,
it does. I mean, you can hear from what we described, we get like a little bit of season one, just a whiff of season two, and then it's season four, and then it's over. Like they really cut out a bunch of stuff. So I guess Shannon Doherty was being late for quite a while, and then, you know, she got fired, and then she was on Charmed, so everything was fine until she got fired from that too. Final thoughts before we name our most and least valuable player?
No, I think I'm good.
All right.
Tara. Right?
No. I would say sure. The most, judging by the way she's portrayed in this, Tori Spelling might be the most valuable player.
Nope, wrong.
Did not just decide who was going to be playing all of the roles, but also like kept Shannon on the show for like probably two seasons longer than she might have under other circumstances, as she's portrayed in the movie. What do you think?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say the
The first AD.
Yes, actually, I was gonna say Durand Jr., but
yeah.
Let's go with the first AD. Paul.
You're both wrong. It's Dan Castellaneta's
weird accent.
Voice work, yeah. It's by far the most enjoyable thing.
Dan Hepburn Linetta.
Yeah. Oh, it's tough.
Least valuable player.
I mean, I guess Gabrielle Carteris, because she really doesn't get to do anything. I mean, that's the problem with being, you know, the person who caused no problems and didn't really have a problem with anybody.
And was like 32 and went home at 8:30 every night. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with President Ronald Reagan because he's frarable.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
The garbage can.
Oh, it's a garbage cart.
The garbage cart.
I think we can skip the Kim challenge because Dylan is not really in here. And that's it.
Thank you for bearing with us during the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 story. Next time, we return to your regularly scheduled nightmare of a revisitation of this show when the Walsh's cousin rolls into town and causes Brandon to try to cry and pray at the same time. You can hear that and see all the visual aids from this fine episode at previously.tv. You can follow us at previouslyTV on Twitter. You can follow Dave at Glark, my esteemed co-host Tara at Tara Ariano, and I'm at Tomato Nation. See you next time.
Ring, 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 ring. You know what to do. Leave a message at the beep-a-roni.
Canadian Dylan.